that something preceded the horrible events that occurred at the cabin that night. Something that Miss Carpenter wanted to keep secret. This led my partner to believe she might have had something to do with the deaths of her friends. I didn't share his opinion then, nor do I share it now. Especially in light of the compelling testimony given by Officer Cooper at a hearing on the matter. Still, even to this day, I do think Miss Carpenter is hiding something about what happened at Pine Cottage. What that might be is something only Miss Carpenter knows. Sincerely, Detective Henry Fremont. I've said all there is to be said regarding the matter of Pine Cottage. My opinion of Quincy Carpenter has not changed. Cole. Other than Detective Fremont's eloquence, nothing about the content of the emails surprises me. Cole thinks I'm guilty. Fremont is in the middle. Yet their existence gives me pause, even more than seeing those folders hidden in Lisa's closet. This is proof that she was looking into my past, mere weeks before she was killed, no less. I try to tell myself that one isn't related to the other, but that's not possible. They are. I know it. Two more printed emails sit beneath the ones from Cole and Fremont. Unlike those, this pair rattles me. It's good to hear from you again, Lisa. As always, I hope you're well. Quincy is also doing well, so your questions regarding what happened at Pine Cottage surprise me. However, I am thankful you didn't pose them to Quincy herself, and I hope you continue to display such discretion. I can only tell you what I've been saying all along. Quincy Carpenter endured a terrible experience, as you well know and can certainly relate to. She's a survivor, just like you. It's my firm belief that Quincy is telling the truth when she says she can't remember much about that night. As a child psychiatrist, you of all people know that repressed memory syndrome is a real condition. Considering what happened to Quincy, I can't blame her mind for wanting to forget. Franklin Cooper. P.S. I won't tell Nancy what you're doing. I'm sure she'll frown upon it. At first, disappointment nudges my ribs as I wonder why Coop never bothered to tell me that Lisa had recently contacted him. It seems like something I should have known about, especially in the wake of her murder. But I soften once I reread his earnest defense of me. It's just so Coop. Firm, polite, revealing nothing personal. That's when I realize why he didn't tell me about it. He didn't want to upset me. As surprised as I am by Coop's email, nothing prepares me for the one beneath it. Hello, Lisa. Thank you for contacting me instead of writing to Quincy directly. You're right. It's best that we keep this under wraps. There's no point in upsetting her. Unfortunately, I can't say I'll be of much help. Quincy and I aren't in touch as much as we used to be. But that's how things go. Always so busy. If you'd like to talk, I'll give you my phone number and you can call me when you're able. Sheila. The email's such a shock that at first I'm not quite sure it's real. I blink, expecting it to be gone when I reopen my eyes. But it's still there, the words bold on the snow-white page. That bitch. Furious, I hop out of the car and stand on the road's edge. Next to my feet is a spray of broken glass. A bottle, probably. Yet I can't help but think it's the wine glass missing from Lisa's house. Tossed out the window of a speeding car, its driver still high on a post-killing adrenaline rush. I dig the lighter out of my pocket and hold it to the bottom corner of the folder. It's a cheap thing that requires several flicks to spark a flame. No wonder the clerk let me steal it. The store probably gives them out for free. Once lit, the fire smolders a moment, taking time to sink its teeth into the folder. Soon a flame is running up its side. When the flame threatens to burn my hand, I drop the folder, fingers of fire shimmering in midair. The driver of a passing rig sees it, blares his horn, keeps on trucking. On the ground, the folder burns until it's just ash caught in the breeze of vehicles barreling down the road. Once I'm convinced that every page has been destroyed, I snag the water bottle sitting in the car's cup holder and pour it onto the folder, the flames vanishing into hisses of smoke. Destroying evidence. That's the easy part. What I have to do next is going to be a whole lot harder. Back in the car, I swerve back onto I-65, heading north. I steer with one hand and dial my phone with my other. Then I lay the phone flat on the passenger seat, set to speaker mode. Each ring sounds out loud and clear inside the car. The noise reminds me of my phone calls on Mother's Day, when I count each ring, guiltily hoping no one will pick up. Today, someone does. "Quincy?" my mother says, clearly shocked to be hearing from me. "Is something wrong?" "Yes," I say. "Why didn't you tell me Lisa Milner contacted you?" 31. There's a pause on my mother's end. Long enough to make me think she's hung up. Seconds pass in which I hear nothing but the whoosh of air sliding across the car's exterior. But then my mother speaks. Her voice is lukewarm and without inflection, the aural equivalent of melted vanilla ice cream. "What a strange question, Quincy." I huff out an angry sigh. "I saw the email, Mom. I know you gave her your phone number. Did she call you back?" Another pause. A bit of static crackles from my phone before my mother says, "I knew you'd be angry if you found out." "When did you talk?" I say. "Oh, I don't know." "You do, Mom. Now tell me." More pausing, more static. "About 2 weeks ago," my mother says. "Did Lisa say why she was so suddenly interested in me again?" "She told me she was worried." This sends a chill scudding through me. "Quincy, I need to talk to you. It's extremely important. Please, please don't ignore this." "Worried for me or about me?" "She didn't really say, Quincy." "Then what did you talk about?" "Lisa asked me how you were doing. I told her you were doing great. I mentioned your website, your nice apartment, Jeff." "Anything else?" "She asked..." My mother stops herself, thinks, carries on. "She asked if you've recovered any memories of what happened that night." Another chill goes through me. I switch on the car heater, hoping that will make it go away. "Why would she do that?" "I don't know," my mother says. "And what did you tell her?" "The truth. That you can't remember a thing." Only it's not the truth. Not anymore. I remember something. A keyhole-sized peek into that night. I take a deep breath, inhaling the dusty, hot air rushing from the heating vents. It does nothing to warm me. All it manages to do is make my throat itchy and dry. My voice is a rasp when I say, "Did Lisa mention why she wanted to know this?" "She said she'd been thinking about you lately. She said she wanted to check in on you." "Then why didn't she call me?" Instead, Lisa had reached out to Cole, Fremont, Coop, and my mother, everyone but me. By the time she did reach out, it was too late. "I don't know, Quincy," my mother says. "I guess she didn't want to bother you. Or maybe..." Another pause. A lengthy one. So long that I can feel the distance stretching between my mother and me. All those fields and cities and small towns that sit between this Indiana highway and her two white house in Bucks County. "Mom?" I say. "Maybe what?" I was going to say that maybe Lisa thought you wouldn't be honest with her.
She didn't actually say that, did she?
No, my mother says. Nothing like that. But I got a feeling, and I could be wrong, I got the feeling that she knew something, or suspected something.
About?
My mother goes quiet. About what happened that night. I squirm in the driver's seat, suddenly unbearably hot. Beads of sweat have popped along my brow line. I wipe them away and click off the heater.
What gave you this feeling?
More than once, she stressed how lucky you were, how you recovered so quickly, how your wounds weren't that bad, especially compared with what happened to the others.
In 10 years, this is the most my mother has ever talked about Pine Cottage with me. 4 lousy sentences. I'd consider it some sort of warped breakthrough if the situation weren't so dire.
Mom, I say, did Lisa suggest that I had something to do with what happened at Pine Cottage?
She didn't suggest anything.
Then why do you think she suspected something?
I don't know, Quincy.
But I do. It's because my mother also suspects something. She doesn't think I killed the others. But I'm certain that, just like Cole and Fremont, she wonders why I lived when no one else did. Deep down, she thinks there's something I'm not saying. I think about the way she had looked at me after I trashed the kitchen all those years ago. The hurt darkening her eyes. The utter fear quivering in her pupils. I wish to God I could forget that look as thoroughly as I've forgotten that hour at Pine Cottage. I want it erased from my memory, painted so black I can never see it again.
Why didn't you tell me about this?
I tried, my mother says, going heavy on the faux indignation. I called you 2 days in a row. You didn't call back.
You talked to Lisa 2 weeks ago, Mom, I say. You should have called me as soon as it happened.
I wanted to protect you. As your mother, that's my job.
Not from something like this.
All I want is for you to be happy, my mother says. That's all I ever wanted, Quincy. Happy and content and normal.
Within that last word lies all my mother's hopes and all my failings. It's as powerful and potent as a grenade dropped into the conversation. Only I'm the one who explodes.
I'm not normal, Mom! I scream, my words bouncing off the windshield. After what happened, there's no possible way for me to be normal!
But you are, my mother says. You had a problem, but we took care of it, and now everything is fine. Tears burn the corners of my eyes. I try to mentally force them not to fall. Yet they leak out anyway, slipping down my cheek as I say, I'm as far from fine as you can possibly get. My mother's tone softens. In her voice is something I haven't heard in years, concern.
Why didn't you ever tell me this, Quincy?
I shouldn't have had to, I say. You should have seen that something was wrong.
But you looked fine.
Because you forced it on me, Mom. The pills and the refusing to talk about it. That was all because of you. Now I'm... I don't know what I am. Screwed up, obviously. So screwed up that I could tally for my mother the many ways in which I've failed as a human being. I'm likely in trouble with the police. I'm possibly harboring Lisa's murderer in an apartment I could only afford because my friends were butchered. I'm addicted to Xanax and wine. I pretend I'm not depressed and angry and alone. Even when I'm with Jeff, I sometimes feel so unbearably alone. What's worse is that I never would have realized this without Sam crashing into my life. It took some prodding on her part, of course. All those tests and dares and nudges to reveal something about myself, to remember tiny details of something I'm all too happy to have forgotten. Then it hits me. Hard. I'm like a nail just struck by a hammer, brittle, quivering, sinking deeper into something from which there is no escape. Mom, what did Lisa sound like on the phone?
What do you mean?
She sounded like I imagined her to sound.
I need specifics, I say. How did her voice sound? Hoarse? Raspy?
I really didn't notice.
My mother's confusion is evident. I picture her staring at the phone, befuddled.
You're the one who talked to Lisa all those years ago. I don't know what she's supposed to sound like.
Please, Mom, if you can think of anything.
For the last time, my mother lapses into a deep silence. I clutch the steering wheel, hoping she'll come up with something. And while she's failed me many, many times in the past, in this instance, Sheila Carpenter comes through.
There were a lot of pauses, she says, ignoring the irony coiled in that statement. Lisa would talk, then pause. And with each pause, I heard a little exhale.
Like a sigh?
Quieter than that.
It's all I need to know. In fact, it tells me everything.
Mom, I need to go.
Will you be all right?
My mother asks. Tell me that you'll take care of yourself.
I will. I promise.
I hope that whatever's going on, I was able to help.
Yes, Mom, I say. Thank you. You helped more than you'll ever realize.
Because now I know that those pauses my mother had heard definitely wasn't sighing. It was the sound of someone smoking. Which means she hadn't spoken to Lisa. My mother had talked to Sam. Curious, inquisitive Sam. She knows more than she let on. She's known it all along. That's why she showed up out of the blue. It wasn't to connect with me. It wasn't for money. She's trying to find out everything she can about Pine Cottage. About what I did there. I end the call and roll down the window, letting myself be hit with bursts of crisp Midwestern air. My grip tightens around the steering wheel as my foot presses on the accelerator. I watch the speedometer creep higher, passing 70, 75, flirting with 80. It doesn't help, no matter how fast I drive. I still feel like a fly, wriggling in a web of Sam's making. I realize there are only two ways to get free, fight or flight. I know which one it needs to be. Back at the hotel, I change my airline reservation. There's an 8 p.m. flight from Chicago to New York. I'm going to be on it. Jeff, of course, doesn't understand why I need to fly back to New York so suddenly. He peppers me with questions as I stuff clothes into my suitcase. I answer each one twice, the lie out loud, the truth in my head. Does this have something to do with Sam?
No.
Of course it does. Quincy, did she do something wrong?
Not yet.
Yes, she's done something terrible. We both have. I just don't understand why you need to leave this second. Why now?
Because I need to get back as soon as possible.
Because Sam knows things about me. Horrible things. Just as I know horrible things about her. Now I need to get her out of my life for good.
Would it help if I went with you?
That's sweet, but no. You still have work to take care of.
You can't go with me, Jeff.
I've been lying to you about many things, and if you find them out, you won't want to be anywhere near me. Once I'm packed and heading for the door, Jeff grabs me and pulls me tight against him. I long to remain in that exact spot. Held in place, comforted. But that's not possible. Not with Sam still in my life.
Will you be okay?
He asks.
Yes, I tell him.
No. Despite what you might think, I'll never be okay. The plane is small, barely booked.
A money-losing trip that exists solely to get the aircraft to JFK for a more profitable flight in the morning. I have an entire row to myself. After takeoff, I stretch across the empty seats. Lying there, I do everything possible not to think about Sam. Nothing works. There's no way to ignore the suspicion that skitters into my thoughts as if on spider legs. I imagine her dropping pills into Lisa's wine glass, seeing her sip them into her system, waiting until they take effect. I picture Sam with a knife, slicing Lisa's wrists, watching the results as she bites her fingernails. Is she capable of doing such a thing? Maybe. Why would she do such a thing? Because she was on the hunt for information about me. Perhaps she roped Lisa into helping her. But Lisa had second thoughts, pushed her away, threatened to kick her out. Now it's my turn to do the same thing. I pray the results are different. Somehow, I managed to sleep for most of the flight, although even that offers little relief. I dream of Sam sitting stiff-backed on my living room sofa. I'm in a chair across from her. "Did you kill Lisa Milner?" I ask. "Did you kill those kids at Pine Cottage?" she says. "You're avoiding the question." "So are you." "Do you think I killed people at Pine Cottage?" Sam smiles, her lipstick so red it looks like her mouth has been smeared with blood. "You're a fighter. One who will do anything to survive. Just like me." A flight attendant snaps me awake as we make our descent into New York. I get into the upright position, shaking the dream away. I look out the window, the night sky and plane's interior lights turning it into an oval mirror. I barely recognize the reflection staring back at me. I can't remember the last time I did.
Pine Cottage, 10:14 p.m. In the bedroom, Craig wasted no time in shedding his pants. Quincy didn't even realize they were off until he was on top of her, drunkenly kissing her, pushing the dress up to her stomach while grinding hard against her inner thigh. When he reached for Quincy's breasts, she put her hands over his, nodding her consent. She was ready for this. Janelle had prepared her. She knew what to expect. She was a vestal virgin, tossed upon the altar, waiting for eternity. But then Craig's breathing grew ragged and rough. So did his movements, which had been made brutish by too much alcohol and pot. When he slid his knees between her legs and pried them open, Quincy's whole body tensed. "Wait," she murmured. "Just relax," Craig said. His face was buried against her neck, sucking it, skin sticking to his hungry mouth. "I'm trying." "Try harder." Craig made another attempt at parting her legs with his knees. Quincy kept them shut, thigh muscles straining. "Stop." Craig thrust his mouth upon hers, his flopping tongue silencing her. He was heavy on top of her, pinning her down, breathing like a bull while bucking against her closed thighs. Quincy felt like she was being smothered, suffocated. Craig's hands fell from her breasts to her knees, prying at them. "Stop," Quincy said, putting more force into it this time. "I mean it." She gave Craig a shove, slid out from under him, and sat up, back against the headboard. Craig's smile lasted a few more seconds before fading as realization set in. "I thought we agreed to do this," he said.
"We did."
"Then what's the problem?" Quincy didn't know if there even was a problem. Her body pulsed with desire, aching for Craig to be on top of her, against her, inside her. Yet a small part of her knew it didn't have to be like this. If they continued, it would be rushed and blunt, almost like they were following another one of Janelle's stupid rules.
I want my first time to be special.
She thought it would make sense to him, that he would see how much this really meant to her. Instead, he said, "This isn't special enough for you. It's better than what I had." The words confirmed something Quincy had always suspected, but never wanted to ask. This wasn't Craig's first time. He had been through this before. The revelation felt to Quincy like a betrayal, small yet painful.
"I thought you knew," Craig said, easily reading her thoughts.
"I just assumed you were too."
"I never told you I was a virgin. I'm sorry if that's what you thought, but it wasn't my doing."
"I know," Quincy said.
She wondered how many other girls had been in the same position with him, and if all of them had simply given in to the pressure. She hoped someone else had resisted. She hoped she wasn't the only one.
"I didn't lie to you, Quincy, so you're going to have to come up with a better excuse than that for saying no."
"But I'm not saying no," Quincy said, suddenly backtracking, mad at herself for doing so. "I just thought..."
"That it would be candles and flowers and romance?"
"That it would mean something," Quincy said. "Don't I mean anything to you?" Craig rolled off the bed, suddenly shy. He searched for his pants while stretching the bottom of his shirt over his crotch. It was all the answer Quincy needed. Still, she reached for him, trying to lure him back to bed before he could get fully dressed. "This doesn't have to be a problem," she said. "I still want to spend the night together. Who knows what will happen?"
Despite her efforts, Craig found his pants on the floor next to the bed and started to stuff his legs into them.
"Nothing is going to happen. I think you've made that very clear."
"Please come back to bed. I just need to give it some more thought."
"Think all you want."
Craig zipped his fly and headed for the door.
"But I'm done thinking."
Then he was gone, rejoining the party, leaving Quincy curled up in bed and crying. Large tears dripped onto the borrowed white dress, each one spreading, darkening the silk.
32. It's past midnight when I reach home. Rather than well-rested from my nap on the plane, I am drowsy and weak. My hands tremble as I unlock the door, partly from exhaustion, partly from uncertainty. I don't know what's awaiting me inside the apartment. I imagine opening the door to see the place stripped of every item we own, my post-dated check tossed onto the bare floor. And even that's better than finding Sam waiting for me in the shadows of the foyer, knife raised. I drop my bags just inside the door, freeing my hands in case I need to defend myself. But there's no Sam gripping a knife. No Sam offering a glass of wine swimming with pills. A quick look around seems to confirm everything that was here before I left remains here still. The apartment is dark and, from the feel of it, empty. The place has an air of abandonment, as if someone has only recently departed, leaving bits of their essence swirling like dust. "Sam? It's me!" My heart begins to pound as I wait for a response that doesn't arrive. "I decided to come back early," I call out as my chest fills with hope. "I caught a late flight." I roam the apartment, flicking on lights. Kitchen, dining room, living room. No trace of theft. No trace of Sam. She's gone. I'm certain of it.
She's skipped town, just as I had hoped, taking her secrets with her and leaving mine.
I dig through my purse in search of my phone. I texted Jeff when I landed, telling him I'd arrived safely and that I'll call him when everything is over. Now it is over, and I'm in the hallway, phone in hand, about to hit dial. That's when I notice the door to the guest room is still closed. Light seeps from beneath the door, crossing my shoes as I stand in front of it. Music plays on the other side, muffled behind the wood. My heart hits the floor. Sam is still here. Sam? I reach for the doorknob. It's loose in my hand, the door unlocked. Without hesitation, I swing it open and look inside. The room is bathed in red and gold light. The red is from the nightstand lamp. The gold comes from several candles that sit beside it. Music plays from an old CD player that's been pulled from the storage closet. Peggy Lee, purring out Fever. In the soft half-light, I can make out Sam on the edge of the bed. At least I think it's her. She looks so unlike her normal self that recognition is slow to arrive. She wears a dress far different from the grungy black one she first showed up in. This one is red, with capped sleeves, an A-line skirt, a scooped neck that gives a tantalizing peak of cleavage. Matching heels are on her feet. Her hair is pulled up, exposing her pale neck. She's not alone. A man sits beside her in a crisp black polo shirt and khakis. I have no trouble recognizing him. Coop. His hand is on Sam's neck, caressing the pale skin just beneath her chin. Sam is touching him too, her index finger riding the swell of his left biceps. They lean into each other, faces turned, on the verge of a kiss. What? What the fuck is going on? That's what I mean to say, but only the first word comes out. Sam drops her hand from his arm. Coop's hand remains at her neck, his whole body stilled by surprise. I haven't seen him so shocked since our first meeting outside Pine Cottage. He wears the same expression he did that night. It's not as extreme, not as horrified, but it's there. A slightly smudged copy of the original. Quincy, he says, I'm so... Get out. He manages to stand and steps toward me. I can explain. Get out, I say again, growling the words. But... Get out! Suddenly I'm upon him, scratching at him with one hand while unleashing a series of slaps with the other. My hands soon turn to fists, flying at him, not caring what part of him I hit as long as I hit something. And I do, landing blow after blow as Coop merely stands there and takes it. But then Sam swoops in, a flash of red, all but tackling me against the wall. Go! She hisses to Coop. He pauses at the door, watching me wail and thrash and pound my head against the wall, each thump harder than the last. Get the fuck out! Sam yells. This time, Coop obeys and slips out of the room. I slide down the wall, weeping. Pain makes me double over, arms folded across my stomach. It feels like a sharpened blade is pushing into my gut, stabbing me again and again. And again.
Pine Cottage, 10:56 p.m. Quincy, drained of tears, left the room in search of Janelle. She needed that combination of abrasiveness and pity only Janelle could provide. She was like human sandpaper in that regard, rough and soothing in equal measure. In the great room, she found Ramdi stuffed into one of the armchairs. Amy sat on Rodney's lap, one lithe arm around his neck as they made out. They reminded Quincy of swimmers, mouths open, gasping. Where's Janelle? The female half of Ramdi surfaced, catching her breath, annoyed to be so disturbed. What? Janelle, have you seen her? Amy shook her head before diving back under. Quincy then headed outside, creaking across the deck. It was a clear night, the full moon coloring the trees pale gray. She paused on the deck steps, listening for signs of Janelle. Footsteps on the grass, for instance. Or the throaty laugh that was so familiar she could pick it out in a crowd. She heard nothing but the last of the season's creepers in the trees and the distant, forlorn hoot of an owl. Rather than go back inside, Quincy kept walking, drawn into the woods. She found herself following the same path they had trod earlier, the leaves still tamped down. It was only when the forest floor began to rise that Quincy thought about turning back. By then it was too late. She needed to push on, even though she wasn't sure why. Call it a hunch, an instinct, a certainty even, surging with the blood inside her veins. The large rock peeked into view as she neared the top of the incline. Its sheer size created a break in the canopy of tree branches overhead. It was like a hole in an umbrella, silver moonlight pouring through it, raining down on two people atop the rock. One of them was Janelle. The other was Craig. He lay on his back, shirt off and balled under his head to form a makeshift pillow. His pants had been shoved to his ankles, circling them like manacles. Janelle sat on top of him, riding him. Each thrust moved the skirt of her dress, an ebb and tide of fabric across Craig's bare thighs. The top of her dress was pulled down, exposing breasts so pale they practically glowed in the moonlight. "Yes," she moaned, the word a wisp mingling with the night air. "Yes, yes, yes." Anger and hurt clenched Quincy's stomach, like there was a hand there holding her insides, squishing them as it curled into a fist. Yet she couldn't look away. Not with Janelle moaning like that, her movements more desperate than passionate. It was all too beautiful and painful and grotesque. Then the sobs came, burbling out of her. Quincy slapped a hand over her mouth to block the sound. Even though she shouldn't have cared if they heard her, even though all she wanted to do was scream to the sky, her banshee's wail riding the breeze. But the angry fist inside her kept squeezing, increasing her anger, her pain. She slipped back through the woods, fresh tears forming where the earlier ones had dried. She could still hear Janelle as she slid down the incline, her repeated moans like a taunting bird in the branches. "Yes, yes, yes."
33. "Why?" I say, still on the floor. Sam ignores me, instead crossing the room to silence the CD player. Then it's on to the knapsack, where she pulls out her black jeans and begins to slide them on under the skirt of the red dress. "Why?" "Because it needed to be done," Sam says. "It didn't," I say, rising to my knees. "You just felt like it did." Because she knew how much it would hurt me once I found out. And I was certain she intended to make sure I found out. This was just another way to mess with me, to wake me up, to make me angry. I claw at the wall, using it to help me rise to my feet. Still unsteady, I lean against it, leveling my gaze at Sam. She's removed the dress and is now yanking her Sex Pistols shirt over her head. Then she sits on the bed, replacing the fuck-me heels with her combat boots. "You're sick," I tell her. "You know that, right? You can't stand to think that one of us could have a normal life. That at least one of us could actually be happy." Sam goes to the window, throws it open, and lights a cigarette. Puffing out smoke, she says, "You have me all figured out, don't you?" "I do. You came here and saw that I was normal and stable and decided that you had to fuck it all up." "Stable? You sent a guy to the hospital, babe. He's still in a goddamn coma. Because of you. You wanted me to do it." "Keep thinking that, Quinn. If you need that lie to be able to live with yourself, then keep on believing it. I look away, not sure what to believe. It feels as if gravity has failed and everything once secure and settled in my life is now tumbling in midair, suddenly just beyond my reach. "Why, Coop?" I ask. "It's Manhattan. There are a million guys you could have picked. So why him?" "Insurance." "For what?" "That detective came by again this morning," Sam says. "Hernandez. She said she wanted to talk to you. When I told her you were away, she said she'd be back and that you shouldn't have left town." Because my running off with my lawyer boyfriend made me look suspicious. Of course it did. "I didn't know what to do," Sam says. "So I called Coop." I suck in my breath, suddenly numb. "You didn't tell him about the park, did you?" Sam rolls her eyes while hissing out smoke. "Hell no. I told him that we should get to know each other better, that he should come to the city if he could. He did."
"And you seduced him?"
"I wouldn't say that," Sam says. "He was more than willing."
"Then why did you do it?"
Sam lets out a weary sigh. She looks so tired, so defeated by life. So utterly damaged. "Because I thought it would help us," she says. "You, especially. If the police are able to trace that guy's beating back to us, we're going to need someone on our side. Someone other than Jeff." "A cop," I say, grim understanding settling over me. "One who can defend us to his colleagues. One too blinded by emotions to do the right thing and turn us in if he suspects something." "Bingo," Sam says. "But you know all about that, don't you?"
"I've never tried to fuck Coop."
A snort from Sam, nostrils streaming smoke. "Like that matters. You're still using him. For years you've used him. Texting him at all hours, beckoning him into the city at a moment's notice, flirting with him every now and then to keep him interested."
"That's not how it is," I say. "I would never do that to him."
"You do it all the time, Quinn. I've seen you do it."
"Not on purpose."
"Really?" Sam says. "You mean to tell me this weird, creepy thing between you two has nothing to do with what happened at Pine Cottage? That you've never noticed, not even the tiniest bit, that you have him wrapped around your finger?"
"I don't," I say.
Sam stubs out her cigarette, lights another. "Lies, lies, lies."
"Let's talk about lies," I say, pushing away from the wall, strengthened by anger.
"You lied when you told me you never met Lisa."
"You did. You stayed at her house."
Sam stops inhaling on the cigarette, her cheeks slightly sucked in, smoke gathering in her mouth. When she parts her lips, a grayish cloud rolls out like a fog bank.
"You're crazy."
"That's not an answer," I say. "At least admit you were there."
"Fine. I was there."
"When?"
"A few weeks ago," she says. "But you already knew that."
"Why did you go? Did Lisa invite you?"
Sam shakes her head.
"So you just showed up like you did with me?"
"Yup," Sam says. "Unlike you. She actually said hello when she realized who I was."
"How long were you there?"
"About a week," Sam says.
"So she liked having you there?"
It's a wasted question. Of course Lisa liked having Sam there. It's what she lived for, taking troubled young women under her wing and helping them. Sam was likely the most troubled of them all.
"She did," Sam says, "at first. But by the end of the week, Lisa couldn't deal with me anymore."
I infer the rest. Sam showed up out of the blue, knapsack bulging with wild turkey and expressions of sisterhood. Lisa gladly let her crash in the guest room. But that wasn't enough. Not for Sam. She needed to pry, to needle. She probably tried to shake Lisa out of her complacency, to make her get angry, to make her a survivor. Lisa didn't let her. I did. Both of us paid a very different price.
So why did you lie about it?
Because I knew you'd become a drama queen if I told you. That you'd start getting suspicious.
Why?
I say. Do you have something to hide? Did you kill Lisa, Sam? There it is. The question that's been itching at the back of my brain for days, now spoken, made real. Sam shakes her head as if she pities me.
Poor, sad Quincy.
You're more messed up than I thought.
Tell me you had nothing to do with her death, I say.
Sam drops the cigarette, making a show of grinding it out on the hardwood floor with the toe of her boot.
No matter what I say, you're not going to believe me.
You've given me no reason so far, I reply. Why start now?
I didn't kill Lisa, Sam says. Believe me or not, I don't give a fuck.
A beep rises from deep within my pocket. My phone.
That's probably your boyfriend, Sam says with pronounced disgust. One of them, at least.
I check the phone. Sure enough, there's a text from Coop.
We need to talk.
At the window, Sam asks,
which one is it?
I don't answer, which is an answer in itself. I stare at the screen, my heart seizing up at the prospect of seeing Coop again. Not just tonight, but ever again. Sam jams another cigarette between her lips and says,
run to your little cop, Quincy Carpenter.
But remember, watch what you say.
My secrets are your secrets.
And Officer Cooper might not like yours.
Go to hell, I say.
Sam lights up and smiles.
Already been there, babe.
Pine Cottage, 11:12 p.m. Quincy was out of breath by the time she reached the cabin. Her lungs burned, scraped by both exertion and the night air. Despite the chill, a thin coating of sweat covered her skin, cold and sticky. Inside, it was quietly chaotic. All dirty dishes and liquor bottles with only dregs remaining. The great room was abandoned. Even the fire had gone out, a trace of wood smoke heat the only reminder it ever existed. Sleep. That was all Quincy wanted, to fall asleep and wake up having forgotten everything she had seen. It was possible, she knew. Already her brain was telling her that she was mixed up, saw something she didn't really see. Maybe Janelle had been with someone else, Joe perhaps. Or maybe Quincy only thought she saw Craig lying on his back, face contorted, pushing into her. But her heart knew otherwise. Wiping away tears, Quincy crept down the hall, passing Janelle's empty room. Across the hall, Betts had gone to bed, the closed door shutting out the view of those sad bunk beds. The door to Ramdi's room was also closed, not quite blocking out the violent sloshing sound of the waterbed. Occasional grunts from Rodney rose with the tide. Quincy turned into Craig's room. Fuck Craig. It was her room now. But it wasn't empty. Someone was on the bed, a vague outline in the moonlit gloom. He lay with his hands behind his head. Quincy faintly saw his wide-open eyes behind his dirty glasses.
I didn't know where to sleep, he said.
Quincy stared at him, jealous of how comfortable he looked, how oblivious he was. She sniffed. She caught a tear before it could streak down her face.
Are you okay?
He asked. You need to go, Quincy said. He sat up, concern flickering in his half-obscured eyes.
You're not okay.
No shit, Quincy said, sitting on the bed. Another tear fell. This time she wasn't able to stop it.
I saw them leave together,
he said.
They walked into the woods.
I know.
I'm sorry.
He touched her shoulder, the suddenness of the gesture making Quincy recoil. Please go, she said.
He doesn't deserve you.
When he touched her shoulder a second time, Quincy allowed it. Emboldened, his hand slipped down Quincy's arm to her midriff. Again, she let him do it.
You're better than him,
he whispered.
Better than both of them. So pretty.
Thank you, Quincy said.
I mean it.
Quincy turned to him, grateful for his presence. He seemed so sincere, so inexperienced, the opposite of Craig. She leaned in and kissed him. His lips were hot against hers, kissing back. His tongue slid into her mouth, tentative, exploring. It made Quincy almost forget what she had seen in the woods, how Janelle was on top of Craig, riding him, her body radiating lust and pain. But that wasn't enough. Quincy wanted to forget completely. Without a word, she climbed on top of him, surprised at how solid he felt beneath her, like a downed tree, sturdy oak. Quincy pulled off his sweater, which smelled vaguely of industrial-strength cleaner. The odor stung her nose as she tossed it to the floor and tugged his T-shirt over his head. She began to suck on his narrow chest, running her hands over the milky skin. So pale, so cold, like a ghost. Then her panties were off, his corduroys were at his knees. On the floor beside the bed was Craig's backpack. Inside was a box of condoms. Quincy pulled one out and gave it to Joe, placing it into his trembling palm.
Are you sure?
He asked. Yes.
Tell me if it hurts,
he whispered.
I don't want to hurt you. I just want to make you feel good.
Quincy took a deep breath and eased herself lower, bracing for the pleasure and the pain, knowing it wouldn't be one or the other. It would be both at once, forever intertwined.
34. Coop texts me the name of a hotel a few blocks from my apartment and the number of the room he's staying in. I don't know if he booked the room before coming into the city to meet Sam or after. I decide not to ask. I pause outside his door, uncertain if I'll be able to face him again. I already know I don't want to. I'd rather be anywhere but this dim hotel hallway with its buzzing ice machine and carpet shampoo stench. But we have a history. No matter what Coop has done, I owe him the chance to explain himself. I knock, the door quickly squeaking open beneath my fist. My hand remains clenched as Coop steps into view. Quincy. The nod he gives me is quick, shameful. Come in. If you want to. Only the past keeps me there. My past. Coop's role in it. The undeniable fact that I wouldn't even have a past if it weren't for him. So I enter, stepping into a room shocking in its smallness. It's nothing more than a large closet someone has managed to fit a bed and dresser into. There's roughly 2 feet of space between bed and wall, making it hard for me to edge around Coop as he closes the door behind me. The room has no chairs. Rather than sit on the bed, I remain standing. I know exactly what I need to do, which is to tell Coop everything. About what Sam has done, what I've done. Maybe then I can start the process of getting my life back to normal. Not that it's ever been normal after Pine Cottage. but I can't confess to Coop. I can barely look at him. Let's get this over with, I say, arms folded, shifting weight onto my left leg so my hip angrily juts. I'll be quick, Coop says. He's just showered, steam lingering inside the minuscule bathroom. Dampness clings to his close-cropped hair, and his body seems to radiate humidity, sultry and soap-scented. I need to explain myself. To explain my actions. What you do in your free time is none of my business, I say. It's not as if you mean anything to me. Coop winces, and I feel a satisfying twinge of strength. I'm hurting him too, drawing blood. Quincy, we both know that's not true. Isn't it? I say. If we meant something to each other, you wouldn't have gone to my apartment to try and fuck Sam while I was away. That's not why I was there. It sure as hell looked that way to me. She called me, Quincy, Coop says. She said she was concerned about you, so I came. Because something wasn't sitting right with me. I don't trust her, Quincy. I haven't since she arrived. She's up to something, and I wanted to find out what it was. Seduction is an interesting interrogation technique, I say. You use it often. What you saw wasn't planned, Quincy. It just happened. I roll my eyes, going all big and dramatic, just like Janelle used to do. That's the oldest excuse in the book. It's true, Coop says. You don't know how lonely I am, Quincy. So completely alone. I live in a house big enough for 5 people, but there's only me. Some rooms I haven't entered for years. They're empty. The door's closed. His confession leaves me speechless. This is the first time Coop has ever opened up to me like this. It turns out we have more in common than I ever imagined. Yet I refuse to feel sorry for him. I'm not ready to forgive him. Is that why you wanted me to come? I say, to make me pity you? No. I asked you here because I need to tell you something. There's a reason... Coop stops to clear his throat. A reason I've tried to be there for you. A reason I've made myself available day or night. Quincy. Instinctively, I know what's coming next. I shake my head, my thoughts screaming, don't, please, Coop, don't say it. He does anyway. I love you. Don't, I say, this time aloud, don't say any more. But I do, Coop says. You know it, Quincy. I think you've always known it. Why else do you think I drive out here at a moment's notice? It's to see you, to be with you. I don't care if it's for 1 minute or 1 hour. Just seeing you makes that whole lonely drive worthwhile. He makes a move toward me, and I back away, stuck in a corner between the dresser and the wall. Coop keeps coming, not stopping until he's right in front of me. I've never met anyone like you, Quincy, he says. Believe me when I say that. You're so strong. A true survivor. He looks at me, his blue eyes making my knees quiver. He touches a thumb to my cheek, sliding it down to my mouth. Coop, I say as his thumbnail gently scrapes my lips. Stop. You feel the same way, Coop says, voice husky. I know you do. I picture him nestled beside Sam, caressing her neck, lips just starting to push against hers. I hate Coop for doing that. He should have been all mine. I don't, I say. You're lying. It's hot inside the room, stifling actually. The humming AC unit under the window does little to change that. And then there's Coop, so close to me, emanating a different kind of heat. I need to go, I say. No, you don't. When he edges closer, I push back, shoving his chest. He's sweating under his shirt. The fabric beneath my hands sticks to his skin.